Thanks for tuning to Digital Voices Podcast, where we chat digital transformation, challenges and opportunities across healthcare and life sciences. And now, your host, Ed Marks. Hey, listeners. Just wanted to remind you to register for the Digital Voices Conference on Thursday, June 17th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Registration is free, and we can't wait to see you there. Now back to the podcast.
Hey, Digital Voices, where we talk digital voices of everyone in health and life sciences, from the provider, the payer, pharma, all of life sciences, really, med tech, retail. But the most important voice that we always want to hear from is the voice of the patient. So I'm really excited to have our guest today, Brianna, talking about the voice of the patient and getting her perspective as it relates to healthcare. And so right before we jump in there, I want to tell a quick story about Team USA. So Brianna, another thing that she and I have in common is Cleveland Clinic, and we have Team USA in common. And what was really a funny experience for me is, if you've ever seen these races on television, you'll see people getting passed, right? You'll see the gold medalists and they're passing people. Well, the people that they pass is me. And I recall one particular race, it was the World Championships for the long distance duathlon. So it was in the Swiss Alps. And I knew I was in big trouble when I heard helicopters coming, because helicopters certainly aren't there to video me or do live television of me racing along in the Alps. But they're always following the leaders, right? The lead pack, the gold, silver, bronze medalists. And so I knew they were coming up on me, meaning I was being lapped. So I did what any good-natured person would do, is I'm not gonna give up without a fight. So there's some scenes, if you ever look them up, of these gold medalists, you know, of world championships from, they weren't from Team USA, so I wouldn't do that to a teammate, but they were from some other countries. And I'm just like giving them the hardest time as they tried to pass me. So I made it look a little bit better than reality, where they were just smoking me. They were so good. And what's cool today too about Brianna is she wasn't one of those people that being passed. She's the passer. She's a gold medalist, a Paralympian, just an amazing individual I've had a chance to meet previously. So with that, Brianna, welcome to Digital Voices.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And I'm going to let you introduce yourself, but you're wrapping up your sophomore year at University of Akron?
So I actually switched colleges to Lorain County Community College.
Okay.
So I start May 24th, which will be next week, for social work.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because I knew you were doing social work. And so we asked the same question, Brianna, of everyone. And that is, what's your favorite music? So when you listen to music, what kind of music do you like to listen to?
I like to listen to pop music.
That's cool. And like top 40 type things?
Yes. Yeah. And I also watch way too much TikTok. So a lot of the TikTok songs I've learned as well.
No, I have some kids, some of my children like that as well. And what about your life passion, or is there a particular life message that you have, or mantra, the thing that keeps you going, is, you know, that's like your North Star?
So I was born without my legs and my arm, along with spina bifida and caudal aggression syndrome. So, and I've been heavily involved with the clinic for about 20 years. It'll be 20 years in July. And, you know, I'm very grateful for all the people that I've met throughout my health journey at the clinic. And I think that's what keeps me going, because even in my swimming career, it was the people that made me want to keep swimming. And it's the people at the clinic that make me want to spend way too much hours and have many frequent miles at the clinic. It's the people at the clinic that make the clinic who, you know, what it is.
Yeah.
So I just would say that I'm very grateful for the people I've met along the way, and experiences are awesome, but it really is the people that made quite a difference in my life.
Yeah. And I think the clinic says the same about you. You've been an inspiration to many of the caregivers there. And I remember meeting you at the big gala one year, and I think I tried to recruit you into IT, but you know, you went off to college instead. So,
yes.
So, what is your? Tell us a little bit about the Team USA experience. Really curious about that. I'm sure our listeners are as well. So, you swam for the team for how long, and what? And you did not just Paralympics, but you did like Pan Am Games too, right?
Yes. So I started Paralympic swimming in 2012. So my first meet was in Colorado Springs at the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center. And that was really fun. And then the first meet was actually in honor of a Paralympic swimming coach named Jimmy Flowers. He tragically died in a accident in about 2010. And I met him about a year before he passed away. And he really wanted me to get into para swimming. So it felt right to do my first meet where the meet was honoring him. And they have that meet every year. It's called the Jimmy Flowers Meet. And I've attended it a few times. But I love Colorado Springs. I love the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center. I love that I can now say the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center. It used to be the Olympic Training Center, but now it's the Olympic and Paralympic Training Center. So that's always an awesome thing to be able to say. And then I went to World Championships in 2013 when I was 12 years old. I went to Montreal, Canada, and I absolutely love Canada. I've swam in Canada a few times. But I really enjoyed it. And then in 2014, I went to Pan Pacific Championships. So that was in Pasadena, California. And that was really cool to be able to represent Team USA on American soil. So that was a really cool experience that I'm grateful to have had. And then I took a break from swimming in 2015. And then came back in about 2016, 2015. And I set another American record in the 100 meter fly in 2018. But in 2019, I didn't do any Team USA trips, but I got to like meet more friends and I got to like go to more places and swim at more meets. So I think it was equally as good of experience as representing Team USA was still being able to meet other new people.
No, that's great. And I've seen your swimming videos are extraordinary. And it's something I struggle with personally is swimming. And so it really helped me to see your swimming. And yeah, congratulations. Does your record still hold, or did someone sneak up on you and beat you now?
No, my records still hold.
Nice.
But thank you. Yeah, I have a Pan American record in the 100 back, and that's the record that I would say I'm most proud of, because I actually broke the record, where the other two records, nobody swam that event before, so I automatically became the record holder. But the 100 meter backstroke was set in 2001. A month after I was born, and in 2014, in the same month that it was broken, 2001, I broke it at 13 years old. So yeah. I think that was pretty cool, because I felt like it was ironic. Like, I was 13 and the record's 13.
Yeah.
So,
that is cool.
So I like that. But actually, Cleveland Clinic Children's Aquatic Therapy is the reason why I got into swimming.
Yeah, so let's talk being a patient now. And obviously you've had a extraordinary experience, because you know the Cleveland Clinic is definitely known for patient experience. What are a couple good things that happened there that made it such a great experience? The first thing you already talked about was the people, right? It always comes down to the people. But what else? What kind of other things might be helpful for other people to know about what makes a good experience for a patient?
So there's a lot of good things that the clinic did and are still doing throughout my 20 years. They always, especially when I was younger, they would always talk to my parents and me. They wouldn't, you know, because I was a young child going through most of my medical things before I was 8 years old. So they helped it, you know, they really took me into account too, and they helped explain it to me and helped make it an easier process for me and my parents. So it was a conjoined effort. And my parents have mentioned that the clinics never made them feel alone in this, whether it was social workers, whether it was child life specialists or physical therapists or occupational therapists or nurses and doctors. You know, they always had a plan and they always worked as a team. And that's what I really admire about the clinic, is that it's really a team effort there. And they all work together to try to make the patient's experience as best as possible. And that's truly what happened with my experience with the clinic, because I've seen almost every specialty at the clinic for children's. So I've really gotten a wide spectrum of experiences at the clinic. So I've met a lot of great doctors. I've met a lot of different nurses and child life specialists from the clinic. I've had 21 surgeries there. The clinic's been really influential, and my goal is to eventually work at the clinic. I originally was going for child life, but I figured that I'll either be a child life specialist at the clinic. I don't know exactly where my path will lead up to, but I just want to work at the clinic, and I want to help medically complex children like myself have a good experience, because the Cleveland Clinic was a huge part of my life is a part of my life, but it really was a huge part of my life growing up, and that was where my first memories are. My first memories are at the Cleveland Clinic. So I definitely appreciate the Cleveland Clinic, and I'm always thankful for the opportunities the clinic has given me to share my story.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. Tell us about, and again, this question is not real about the clinic, but certainly you must have had a challenging time someplace, or maybe it wasn't challenging, but could be at a different hospital. So we're just trying to find out, what are some of the harder parts of being a patient, and what can we as executives do to help minimize that challenge?
Okay. Well, so I was hospitalized from like January through the end of February this year. So that was like 6 straight weeks. And I think I've learned a lot of things from that experience as well. And I think the harder, because that was challenging. That was a challenging time for me and my family, because I was stuck in a hospital room for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And it was really challenging with COVID as well, because there's a lot of like precautions and.
Right.
But I think I'm very medically complex, so I think that can be difficult sometimes. I mean, the clinic, and I sometimes go to Rainbow Babies as well, but they've never really saw it as a huge challenge, or they've never portrayed it that way. But I think at some other hospitals it might be challenging because of how rare my condition is. They may have not seen it before. My condition is 1 in 100,000. So it's called caudal regression syndrome. So I don't have the lumbar portion of my spine, which affects a lot that people don't think about, but it does. So, and then I have some allergies that are not typical. So that can be challenging because I'm allergic to Tylenol, which really people are not allergic to. You know, people either take ibuprofen or Tylenol, and I will go into anaphylaxis from Tylenol. So,
right.
So it's a very, you know, those unique things about myself, I would feel like could pose a challenge. And then also, not at the clinic or not at Rainbows, but I think like at other hospitals possibly, I was, you know, I need certain needs from PCAs and nurses that other patients wouldn't typically have. Like, I'm not able to fully feed myself when I'm in the hospital, you know, not able to get up and walk, or not able, you know, not able to dress myself, go to the bathroom myself, those things that I need extra care for. So I think that also can sometimes pose a challenge, especially.
I hear what you're saying, and it sounds like the challenge is to really know me as a patient and to understand all my needs. And thankfully, because you've been going to the same hospital for a long time, they do know you and take really good care of you when you need them. So I think the message here for our audience, which is largely like chief digital officers and such, that you want to do everything you can to understand your patient, because each one is unique and may have very unique challenges. Yeah. So what about technology, Brianna? How has technology helped you?
Oh, technology has helped me so much. I right now am using a MacBook Air to video call with you. And technology has really helped me with school as well, because I am unable to type as fast as my able-bodied peers. So technology has allowed me to voice type, which has really helped. And then they have accessibility features on iPhones and computers now that allow me to do all those things. And then I also have, because of my phone and my computer's accessibility with the technology, I can manage my chart on my own. So I can access my chart, I can access my medical records.
Nice. And,
you know, message my healthcare providers because of the technology and the accessibility features that my phone and computer has.
No, that's great. If you were to become, so I love the fact, Brianna, that you want to get back to the clinic, get your social work degree and come back and help with specifically like with medically complex patients. Mm-hmm. And let's just say that you become CEO. So, you know, I know Toby, and Toby retired, and now we have Tommy, and Tommy's awesome as well. But, you know, he'll retire someday, maybe about the time that you're out of school and you're CEO. So what are two or three things that you might do if you became CEO, like of any hospital, but let's just say Cleveland Clinic?
I think I would keep doing some of the things that the clinic's already implemented, because I think Dr. Cosgrove and Dr. Mihalovich do a great job, and I've really enjoyed meeting and getting to talk to them both. They're both very nice to me. I think, you know, the philosophy that the clinic has for patients first is huge, because you put their patients first, and it's not only in their motto, they actually practice it. So I think I would keep going with that. And then I also love the expansion that the Cleveland Clinic's done, whether it's in Ohio or Florida. And it's really been cool to see, like, globally, how the Cleveland Clinic has impacted people. And I'm really excited for the Cleveland Clinic to open in London. Yeah. I just think that would be so cool. So I would try to keep doing it globally. And then I would also, which the clinic does as well, but I would also make sure that, like, caregivers are appreciated as well. Because I feel like if you appreciate your caregivers, it just helps the whole hospital system overall. So I know that the clinic has, like, celebrates National Nurses Week in May and certain stuff like that. So those are the three things that I would keep doing that the clinic's already implemented.
Yeah, those are good. So again, back to the audience to really capture what Brianna's sharing is really good stuff. And that is the patients first. So whatever you call it in your particular hospital, putting patients first, but at the same time, appreciating the caregivers, like you said, that is so key to success and really taking care of making sure there's a great patient experience. And Brianna, the other things you said was team-based, empathetic caregivers. Parents are never alone in the journey. So as a pediatric patient, that the parents are cared for as well. And the best thing I love what you said was that they talked to you also when you were, you're no longer a child, you're an adult woman now, but when you were a child, they talked to you as a person. They didn't ignore you and just talk to your mom and dad, but they like engaged with you. And that shows respect, and it shows, integrity and care. So that's really cool. Yeah. So my last question for you, and you've already given us so much, what else can we be doing? So the other people listening are, like I mentioned, chief digital officer. So like some technical people, they're CEOs of technical companies. Brianna, is there anything else that we could be doing as a healthcare industry to help medically complex patients?
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to like think. I would emphasize that the electronic medical records be like accessible to, you know, disabled individuals as well. So whether that is large font for people who have an impairment, or not a platform that you don't have to really like use a lot of finger strength for, and that you can use one hand with, because that's what has definitely helped me, is that my chart, I don't have to use my fingers too hard, and I can use it with one hand. So I would keep emphasizing that. Also a version where the text could read aloud to them in case, you know, for visually impaired or for learning disabilities. So those are some of the few, there's a lot more, but those are the few that come to my head right away, is to make sure that electronic medical records are accessible for caregivers and for patients. And I really love, like with the clinic, like all my conditions are listed there, and like when the date they were listed, so that way like before they come in the room they could see all that I have and when it started. So I think that's really helped me as a complex medical patient as well. And then the whole where sometimes the clinic can share, like, you know, like share care to other medical hospitals and stuff, where patients can still have their records at a different hospital. I think that's important. And then, yeah, so those are the few things that, yeah, I think.
Those are really good, because I know even I, one time I was doing rounds, you know how we would round every month, we'd round a lot of patients, and I was talking with a patient who had no arms or legs, and you know, I was thinking about my chart, right? And I'm like, yes, hey, we got to make sure we have a way for all patients to access this. And of course, we figured out a way, right? He would use his a mouth and a stylus, and also then verbal. We started working on the voice commands. And yes, and you really have to, you know, as leaders in healthcare, we really have to think about not just our own experience, because that's all we know, but that's why it's important to round, you know, to learn all about all of our patients and really take care of everyone holistically. And so what you talked about just now is really key messages. I'm just gonna repeat them again for our audience, just to summarize what you just shared. And that is accessibility to the EMR in all of its various forms, whether it's voice or otherwise. Simplify the complex, those things that are complex, we have to simplify them, especially make it easy for the caregivers as well. So when you have a medically complex patient, that they don't have to go through a bunch of different information trying to find all the important stuff, but it's all up front. And then the other thing you mentioned, you didn't use this word specifically, but the digital officers will understand, is interoperability. So that is the ability, right, to share information. So you might go to Rainbows, you might go to a different hospital, or at your university, you might need some of this medical information at a time. And so having the ability to interoperate and share information is so, so important. Brianna, this has been fantastic. Thank you for being our guest. Is there anything else that you want to share with our audience before we say goodbye?
I just want to say thank you so much for this opportunity. And I always want to thank the clinic for always being so good to me and my family.
Yeah, you're an inspiration to many, and I know at the clinic for sure, but to everyone that meets you or hears your story, you're amazing. I know that when I come back to the clinic sometime, I'm going to look you up at working in the Children's Hospital as a social worker helping medically complex patients. So keep up the great work, and I'll look forward to chatting with you again in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brianna.
Hey there, I'm Daniel, one of the producers of this podcast. I'm usually not on the mic except for that awesome intro and outro, but I wanted to take a quick second to invite you to this year's Digital Voices Conference. Last year, I attended Digital Voices, and what I learned helped me level up in my career, my understanding of digital care, and impress my boss. This year's conference features chief digital officers from GE, Zoom, and Anthem. These are the foremost leaders in the space when it comes to digital healthcare. The conference is 100% virtual, so you don't have to mess with travel or PTO. Just log in at the time of the show. Digital Voices 2021 will be on Thursday, June 17th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and registration is 100% free. Just go to digitalvoices.com. That's DGTLvoices.com.
Thank you for listening to Digital Voices Podcast with Ed Martin. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe on your preferred streaming service and leave a rating and review. And most importantly, thanks again for listening.